Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. Suppose you run a business and it's clear that about half of your employees aren't really engaged in their jobs. In fact, studies show that's roughly the national average, with another 18% even working against the company's goals. So what do you do? Look for new hires? Hold a meeting and read the Riot Act, letting folks know their jobs are on the line? Bill Simmons took a different path. Running a chain of quick lube shops, he decided to take positive action to develop an engaged and motivated workforce. Now, he and his partner Chris Dimmick are running a business to teach other companies how to do just that. It's called Elation. Bill and Chris, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Thank you, Brian.
Bill, where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
I was born and raised in a little country town in North Texas, and my father became an itinerant Baptist preacher.
Now, did you hear him speak? I'm assuming the answer is yes.
Many times.
What did you take from that? What did you learn from that?
I learned that there is a heart in people, and one of his gifts was he was able to speak from his heart.
Your education?
Graduated from high school in Baker, Montana, spent a little time in college at Hardin-Simmons University until I got a job.
And what was that job?
Selling cars at Abilene Chrysler Plymouth.
And how'd you end up with Master Lube, the lube chain I mentioned at the top of the show?
If necessity is the mother of invention, desperation was the master of mother of Master Lube. I'd been unemployed for 3 years. Married, two children, home, two cars, mortgages, having coffee with a friend who was one of the owners of what was then the only lube center. In the conversation, I said, I need to get legitimate in the world. He said, why don't you buy that store from us? In fact, what we should really do is give it to you. He didn't, but I ended up changing all people's cars.
If I asked you prior to your taking over Master Lube or getting into that position, the most important thing you'd learned up to that point in your life that still sticks with you, that still proved useful to you, what would that be?
There's a purpose. Find out what your purpose, identify your purpose. Somehow, I always, at least by the time I approached early adulthood, had a sense that there was something that I wanted to accomplish with my life.
But you weren't sure what it was at that time? Is that what you're
saying?
It
was in generalities. Mm-hmm. It was simply that I wanted to make a contribution to society recognized significant in the course of history. You can see my insecurity saying it needed to be recognized.
Yes, we all, I think, sort of lean that way. That's a fairly ambitious goal, to be recognized by history. Any sense where that came from, the desire to make a difference first, which is fundamental, where that might have come from?
I've come to believe over time that it's simply in everybody. And I think Maslow agreed with that.
Maslow?
Abraham, Hierarchy of Human Needs. In there he identified that we all seem to have a need to be a part of something bigger than ourselves and to make a contribution that's recognized in the lives of other people. How that came to me or how that surfaced in my mind early on is still a bit of a mystery.
When did you come across Maslow?
Oh, mid to late 30s. Again, trying to understand how people think and how people get stuck at one place and then all of a sudden burst through to another, and then how I might also do that. That was important to me.
Chris, how about you? Where'd you grow up?
Well, I had a wonderful childhood. I actually was born in Princeton, New Jersey. My mother was a librarian. My father was a nuclear physicist.
That's a mix.
That is a mix. And my mother was born in Shell, Wyoming. And so I spent all of my summers in the Bighorn Mountains around the Shell, Wyoming area. And I spent my winters getting an education in an Ivy League town. So,
well, that's a rich mix. So looking back on that period, let's say pre-college,
yep.
What did you end up holding on to carry with you now from that interesting background?
Well, I developed a love of building things, and I, you know, started out with birdhouses and things like that, and I loved the outdoors and nature, and so my mother in particular cultivated those interests in me. So I like to roll my sleeves up and get dirty, and I like to see the the outcome of a hard day's work. So,
and the interest in building things, is that part of your dad's nuclear physics or being out in Wyoming seeing the real world? Well, how do you size that up?
You know, I've reflected on that quite a bit. My father was willing to undertake things. He built a fiberglass canoe around a styrofoam structure that smashed to pieces on the rocks at one point. He tried to build a sailing boat without much of a keel that tipped over in the wind. And I always kind of, he did woodworking and things like that. I always liked the fact that he would dive in and try things. And sometimes they wouldn't work out, and sometimes they worked out really well. But that willingness to try was something that I gravitated towards at an early age.
And so where has that interest in building led you in career-wise, in summary?
Well, I like building organizations. I started, my first management role was probably a year or two after I started working in the work world. And so I have just loved the idea of building organizations and seeing how you can sort of magnify your vision by getting others to engage in that vision with you.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Bill Simmons and Chris Dimmick about their new business, Elation. So, Bill, you bought a Master Lube store. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, a store.
Okay. What happens that leads you toward Elation?
There were actually a series of epiphanies, Brian. Fairly early on at Master Lube, the one store, it was me and five young guys. Mm-hmm. In those days, we would have referred to them as a young man with three earrings and an attitude. Not always thought of as the choice employee.
Yes.
Extraordinary young man, I discovered. And they began to do extraordinary things. We were delivering extraordinary service to customers. One night, middle of the night, wide awake, staring at the ceiling, cold chills all over my body, it dawned on me that these young people were not only extraordinary, but they were working at a level of about three times what I was paying them, and that every hour they worked for me, that I was going into debt to them. So the next day I went back to the store. I grabbed Mike, who was sort of the alpha male of the group, took him next door to a coffee shop, told him what I was thinking. He looked at me like he wondered what planet I was from, that an employee would talk to him that way. But that we had to find a way to balance that equation. One of the catchphrases that runs through my mind a lot is recognize the obvious.
Okay, so
and it was obvious.
All right, the young man Mike didn't expect it. What was how'd the conversation go? How'd you say you're going to equalize the playing field?
I went through it. I had the deer in the headlight. I told him we have to work this out. A week or so later, I went and got him again and said, Mike, I have an idea. Here's my proposal. If you'll agree to continue to work at the level that you are right now, which is admittedly three times what I'm paying you, I will commit, one, to pay you every dime that is prudent for this company to pay you, which will still be inadequate. And in addition to that, I'll commit to use whatever resources I have to help you achieve whatever it is in your life that you most want to do. And it was actually in that moment that Master Lube was born.
Now, I've done a lot of interviews. I haven't heard anything quite like that. It takes me a minute to get my head around this. Somebody listening might say, that's a reckless offer. To help a guy without knowing whatever he wants to do, you're going to help him do it. What do you say to that?
Ask them and see what it is they want to do.
What did he want to do?
You know, I could never reach him. In my efforts with Mike, I was never able to reach him. And that still happens occasionally, although much less often. In today's world, and even after Mike, as I would spend time with a young person and first develop enough relationship that I had the right to talk to him, earn the right to, mm-hmm. for him to listen to me.
Sure.
Then with a little time, a person will tell you what it is. And everybody has something down there that they would really like to be or they'd really like to do.
So give me an example of somebody that you worked with that you'd earned the right, as you said, by developing a relationship. They opened up to you. They said, here's what I'd like to do, that you've been able to help them achieve.
Young lady came to Master Lube from up the river from Billings. a solid, good farm girl, never owned a dress. Her single ambition in life when she came to work at Master Lou was to prove that she could do anything a man could do. Okay. Took her about 10 minutes. Became our first pit person, female pit person. After a while, she acknowledged that she had always wanted to go to college. Mm-hmm. Never had, no one had ever suggested that was even an option for her.
Right.
So we helped her, and she went up to MSUB, what was then Eastern, and she took a class. Actually did quite well in it. Ended up getting a degree, ended up going on to get a master's, ended up going on to get a doctorate, and the gal today is running a consulting firm in Flagstaff, Arizona.
So between that first experience with Mike and now 30 years pass, you've been engaged with Master Lou for a long period of time. You've had many employees. You just gave two examples. One guy who's busting his tail, you can't reach him.
Yeah.
A young woman comes in, you can reach her, she moves on and enjoys success. Which is more typical? What percentage of people do you reach, and with what consequence for them? And then we're going to talk about what consequence for the business.
Okay. The percentage that we reach today is much higher. Okay. They don't all go as far. They don't all get as much from us as they could. The world is seductive, and once you decide, once you identify what it is you want to be and you get a chance to do it, sometimes you'll rush to that maybe a little before. I'd like to see you spend more time preparing before you do. A person who is with us for 90 days, who's with us long enough to get a sense of what we do, and in that 90 days you may get that sense and decide it's not for you and go get another job.
Okay.
But if you're with me for 90 days, the vast majority will begin to buy in. They'll buy in carefully and slowly. We're talking like so many of us in the world, our background is one of skepticism, and we don't just believe everything quickly. So it takes a little time, and they move slowly. But over time, the majority do buy in.
All right, a majority buy in. First question, very specifically, what does that do in terms of the quality of the work that they're doing for you? In other words, what's in it for Master Lou? That's part of the equation here.
Part of the magic is that it's good business. This is not philanthropy. This is not welfare. This is good business. All of a sudden, I have young people working for me who are on their way to becoming something they really in their heart want to be, and I'm the tool they're using to get there, and what they deliver for me and for my customer is absolutely extraordinary service. All of a sudden, I have a market share and a customer loyalty that Lube Centers would die for.
Okay, now you're saying that the customer loyalty, I come in and get my car lubed, I'm impressed with the quality and efficiency and energy of your people, I'm coming back.
Absolutely.
Now you're saying that's because a majority of your employees have bought in to your effort to get them to reach for personal goals?
And the understanding that we're in this together. Life is a team sport. By my willingness to support them in their desire to become what it is they most want to be, they then are willing to buy in to help me deliver the kind of service that I require in order to satisfy my satisfaction level about service.
Let's say I'm working for you. You touch me, you approach me, and I realize I want to be a veterinarian. Why is it that I'm not just heading out the door to be a veterinarian? Why is it in your experience that I turn around and say, hey, thanks a lot, I'm going to work harder for you? What's the chemistry?
Because you're going towards something, and it's an evolutionary process. It begins with beginning to identify what you're good at, then what you want to do, and then the third step is us helping you achieve the skills in order to achieve to be successful at that. So you move through, and as you do, the things that we ask you to learn in order to achieve your goal of being a veterinarian are all things that you also use in the process of changing oil in people's cars. If you need to become personally disciplined in order to achieve your goal, then we show you how to practice being disciplined by following the process that we use in changing oil in people's cars and measuring your progress and becoming disciplined.
All right. Now, that is all logical. But I thought you said also something about we're in this together. That suggests teamwork, interdependence, rather than independence, I'm on my own.
Okay.
Is that part of it? And if so, where does that come from?
That's huge. One of the extraordinary epiphanies that people come to at various stages in their life is that there is a step past independence. Most of us start out being dependent. We want very dearly to become independent.
Mm-hmm.
What we discover is that that's adolescence. Adulthood is actually interdependent. And that's where you and I are in this together. By me helping you achieve your goal, you help me achieve my goal, and together we ratchet each other up.
Now, do you use that kind of language?
Absolutely. Exactly. Okay. Those words.
Chris, you're a guy that likes to build things and likes to build organizations. Here's a guy that's had an unusual success with 7 shops, has an idea. Obviously, you can tell the passion in his voice that he believes in. What's the relationship? What's the synergy between your interests and his?
I found myself working for a digital equipment corporation in New England, and I was one of 135,000 people that were part of the company as it started to edge its way towards its demise. And I discovered at one point that being a small cog in a giant machine left me very ambivalent about whether I was actually competent to do the work I did. I kind of woke up one morning and realized that if a bus ran me over on my way to work, it might be 8 or 9 days before somebody noticed my cubicle was empty. And so my wife and I really had some long conversations and decided to pick up sticks and move out to Billings, Montana, and start one of the first internet providers in town. And I realized that I knew a lot about the technical side of the internet in 1995, which gave me a big advantage in Billings, but I knew absolutely nothing about running a business. So there are some very fascinating stories, but to cut to the chase, I met Bill Simmons, whose reputation precedes him in the Billings area, and he agreed to help mentor me in how to run a business effectively in the Billings area.
And initially, that business was not Elation.
Correct.
It was something else.
That was Western Technology Partners, one of the first internet providers in the region.
Okay, so you guys now then have entered into a synergistic relationship. He's, from your words, giving you some advice that helps you run a successful business. In essence, what did he tell you that helped your initial business be successful?
I had an engineering focus in my life, and one of the things that Bill immediately engaged me in was networking with business owners in the area. The idea that you have to be a selling organization and that you have to get out and talk to people about what it is you do and convey the sense of passion about why you do what you do. So I really was very much focused on the idea at that time that as the economy on the internet started to grow, that people really didn't know whether you were in Billings, Montana or on Madison Avenue. And the idea that if the people in Billings, Montana were going to compete effectively on the internet, they needed the technical skills to operate on the internet effectively. And I felt like my niche at that point was to help people in the region conduct business effectively over the internet.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Bill Simmons and Chris Dimmick about the new business, Elation, and how it came to be. Bill, you wanted to say something when Chris was describing your assistance to him in launching his business venture.
When we met and he saw some things in me that would be helpful to him, it became really clear to me that this was an extraordinary young man and that this was a man who was going to be a better businessman than I would ever be. And so my first ambition was just to be close enough to him that I could watch what he was going to do.
Now, you used the word passion, Chris, in describing some aspect of what you were doing. Bill clearly is a passionate man. Sometimes passion without organization is, let's say, unruly in business terms. As you look at your team, what do you each bring to this new venture?
As I said, I love building things, and so I spent a lot of time figuring out how you started a foundation and build something up from there, and I get a great deal of satisfaction out of doing that work. My perception is that I enjoy creativity, I enjoy connecting to a vision that I'm passionate about, but I really look at that and look down at how to construct an organization to support that. My perception is that Bill looks at that vision and looks outwardly from that vision about how it impacts the world and kind of gathers energy into that vision and helps use that energy to propel his interests forward. And so we are sort of that consummate yin and yang in that we complement each other and sort of wrap around one another in terms of our skills and commitment.
Let me just see if I got this. He has a vision and passion that comes across very clearly. And part of your skill is helping him build an efficient structure, or together building a structure to leverage that and communicate that out more broadly in a more organized manner.
Very well put.
So if you describe to a potential client what is that synergistic relationship as a business, what is Elation?
I think over the years we've come to the conclusion that people are not successful in this world because of what they know, but rather how they think. And I had a what appeared to be a chance encounter with a gentleman named Ken Turbach, who created a course that was taught at the University of Montana around how to think in ways that are more productive.
Was he involved in log homes or something?
He absolutely was. He owned Alpine Log Homes in Victor, Montana.
Okay, so what struck you in that course that was so powerful?
Well, as a young entrepreneur, I had learned an awful lot of things the hard way by making mistakes and getting myself bloodied. Bill and I had talked a lot about the idea of employee engagement and how you get employees more fully engaged in the mission of the company by having the company get more fully engaged in the mission of the employee. And so when I chanced upon Ken Turbach in a brief presentation he made in Missoula, it just clicked for me that he had a way of teaching people to think in ways that get them more engaged in their personal outcomes. And that just completely resonated with all the conversations Bill and I had had.
Okay, let me go back to something I think you said. The way you think is more important than what you know. So give me an example of how you use that in the real world of employee-employer relations to leverage up both. What's the connection? How you think is more important than what you know.
One way in which that visits itself is people that have very strong convictions around sort of the mechanical details of their particular profession and are willing to be blunt, as they put it, with other people about their version of a truth.
Okay.
And if
here's how you do this. I've done it this way for years. You do it my way or the highway.
It is plain as the nose on my face, and it's your problem if you don't understand that.
And you're saying that's not the best approach?
I'm saying that if you look at a positive outcome, that you might modify the language that you use to help people engage more fully in why it matters to them to look at your approach seriously. And as a consequence, you increase the chances that you will be heard by the person you're interacting with.
Bill?
My first reaction when someone comes at me with dictation is to resist authority. A lot of folks in the world don't react well to authority.
So we've discussed what I'll call the put-down authoritative or authoritarian model. What's the other one? Talk to me like I'm an employee.
Well, in my world, if I tell you what to do, then I've essentially given you permission not to own the outcome, because all you have to do is comply with what I told you to do.
Right.
And I think a much better way is to help you connect with why it matters to do a good job at what you do, and I can then give you the information that helps you do that job well. And I think that's all the difference in the world.
So, Chris, tell me how that would be delivered in the real world.
Say I'm Sarah, and I'm running the housekeeping organization for a large hotel, and you're mm-hmm. Andy, one of my housekeepers.
Right.
So one of the things that I would do is I would help you understand, Andy, you understand that it's not just about how clean the room is, but it's really helping the customer's experience in the hotel, and that's what builds loyalty to the hotel, and that's what makes us successful. So when you had this idea of putting a little tent card under the bed that said, "We look under here too," that's the little touches that make this an extraordinary hotel, and that's why we keep it 100% occupancy.
Bill?
Well, and understand this is an organic process. It's not a moment epiphany kind of thing. And we begin understanding that it makes absolutely no difference to Andy whether we're 100% occupied or not. So before we get to that conversation, we have to show him how that is important to him. How does being good at cleaning a room and the hotel being successful move him towards something that is so important to him that he'll do it well? And the thing that's most important to him is when he identifies what he most wants to do with his life, and he trusts me to help him get there.
Now, you just said what's most important in his life, and in your experience, is that exclusively his individual goals? Is part of it being part of a successful team? What's the mix, if any?
Again, it's hierarchical. There's a point at which it's imperative to him to be a part of a team, to be a part of something that's bigger than himself. Absolutely the same with me. It's the same with you. It's in all of us. Above that is the need to achieve your personal mm-hmm. best.
Someone might say this sounds very good at a human level and noble and positive, but the rubber meets the road. This is business, competitive business. So now I'm a business guy. I'm looking at whether I hire you guys or not. You say in the material you provide on-site coaches and facilitators, a refined curriculum, mobile technology. It's an ongoing program. This is going to cost me money. Convince me it's worth it.
I guess I would cite a couple of things, one of which is the statistic that a Master Lube store makes 68% more revenue than the average Quick Lube store. So there's a very concrete connection to a return on investment for a business person.
That's got my attention.
It does. And this is not just a good idea in Billings, Montana either. We are aligned with a group called Conscious Capitalism, and they have statistics that suggest that companies that combine a sense of purpose with profitability are 9 times more profitable over a 10-year span than companies that are just profit-motivated alone.
Those are impressive numbers. I'm in business. I say, okay, what in nuts and bolts in terms of my business, how do they achieve these kind of results? What's going on?
A more engaged workforce is a workforce that has substantially less turnover, and any business person knows there's a very high cost of turnover. Mm-hmm. We have some clients that are looking at an increase in sales, and one of the things that they realize is that their delivery drivers see their clients much more than their salespeople. So wouldn't it be great if you could get your delivery drivers creating sales leads to increase sales? So in all sorts of different ways, a more engaged workforce finds that 1,001 little things that makes your particular company extraordinary.
So it's tapping into the creative potential of the individual.
Of the entire organization,
and
yes.
As a team.
Yes, absolutely correct.
Bill Simmons and Chris Dimmock, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground, and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.